Welcome to the show. I'm Doug Gottlieb. I'll tell you why the Jets fans need to pump their brakes on Sam Darnold and why Big Ben is full of it. Speak for yourself. Starts now. All right. Hello and welcome. Cowherd and Whitlock are off. I'm joined today by Super Bowl champion Greg Jennings, Fox NFL golf analyst Holly Saunders, and the founder of The Big Lead, Mr. IG himself, Jason McIntyre. Good to see you with a shirt on.
Thank you.
Thank you, Doug.
Great to be here.
Nice. All right, let's start with Tiger Woods, shall we, kids? Who looks like he may be, possibly, might actually be back for real this time. Tiger shot a thrilling final round 64 at the PGA Championship on Sunday. Good enough for second place. Just two shots behind the man of steel, Brooks Koepka. Afterwards, the man who once said second place stinks was actually singing a different tune.
Or if I didn't even play. And so each tournament brought about its own challenges. And I didn't know what the number was going to be this year. I didn't know how I was going to play. And so at the beginning of the year, if you said, yeah, I would have a chance, legit chance to win the last two major championships, with what swing? I didn't have a swing at the time. You know, I had no speed. I didn't have a golf swing. I didn't have, you know, my short game wasn't quite there yet. You know, my putting was okay, but, you know, I hadn't played in 2 years. And so it's been a hell of a process this year.
It's really remarkable to see a guy have perspective, right? Because we lose, but he was a guy who lacked that perspective for so long. To see him have it is kind of a weird thing. But guys, I watched yesterday, and I think you all did as well. I thought he won the day. I know Koepka won the tournament. I know Koepka won the tournament the way that Tiger used to win tournaments at times, by just out-driving people. But man, it sure felt like he won the day, because think of how many times really educated golf people said, it's over. You know, whether it was the fact that he kept switching swing coaches, whether it was the chipping yips, the back, heck, the DUI, which wasn't that long ago. You go back to February of this year, just down the road at Riviera, he didn't make the cut. Or even last week. Last week, he's at Firestone, a place he'd won 8 times, and he fades down the stretch. Jason McIntyre, who sits in this seat, has always said, well, Saturday and Sunday, he always peters out. He played better if he putts at all on Saturday, he wins on Sunday. And on Sunday, he shoots 64 without hitting a fairway in the front nine. I am all in on Tiger, and I actually think he cemented himself as the best golfer ever based upon not just the wins early in the career, but the comeback, which was complete even without the W yesterday.
Yeah, but Doug, we all say you're not good until you're consistent. Okay, Tiger had a great day yesterday, one for the books. You know, he missed the cut at the U.S. Open 2 months ago, right? This is a guy who's turning 43 in December, okay? Tiger Woods is getting up there in age. In the last 20 years, I looked this up. You know how many guys 43 or older have won a major? One in the last 20 years. The odds are stacked against Tiger to do it again. I mean, I know he had a really good weekend, but only 3 of 4 rounds were good enough. And he doesn't, and Holly, you can speak to this. I don't think that Tiger strikes fear into other golfers the way he did in his prime. He just, you know, Brooks did not fold. He was just steely down the stretch, and, you know, weaker golfers in the past would have been, oh, Tiger's coming, I'm scared. I just don't see that fear in any of these young golfers. I don't think Tiger's winning another.
Tiger isn't quite the Tiger of old on a consistent basis. Jason, you're right about that, but still, right now, yesterday, I would have been scared of Tiger if I could see what was going on. Brooks, though, was behind him. Brooks could hear the cheers, but Brooks was unflappable. Yeah. I don't think to Brooks Koepka, you know, and Tiger's his idol. He grew up watching Tiger Woods. I don't think he's afraid of him, but I think Brooks is on another level right now. He told his swing coach, Claude Harmon, that he didn't even need him to say a word this entire week. He said, just stand behind me, make sure that my alignment is correct, but I've got this. I'm feeling good right now.
But you would admit, this isn't the tournament, no disrespect to Brooks Koepka, who's won 3 of the last
correct.
7 majors. It's not about Brooks. It's about Tiger. Mm-hmm. And you said, well, he's too old. Look, you're never too old. You're never too drunk to fish. You're never too old to play golf, okay? He's not your average human being. And no, he's not going to be consistent. Nobody at 42 is, there's a Toby Keith song. I ain't as good as I once was, but I'm as good once as I ever was. That's Tiger Woods. He doesn't have to be the dominant Tiger Woods of his 20s and 30s. All he has to do is be good a couple of times a year. Augusta, Pebble next year, Bethpage Black. and you start putting one or two tournament wins of majors together, think about how competitive he was yesterday against an incredible field.
Greg, you keep saying wins. I mean, we're
you don't forget
wins.
How to win, Greg.
Because this is, that's the next level for Tiger. That's why I've never doubted Tiger. And although there's been several who has, but there's been a lot who has not, because they understand what you just said. You do not forget how to win. You don't forget what it takes to win. It may take time for that to come back. And yes, he has wilted in other tournaments. Yesterday, for the first time in a major, you didn't see that wiltering stance, that wiltering demeanor, that presence. You saw a guy who, no matter what happened off the tee, I got to figure out a way to scramble and get back into play and do what I've always done in my entire career, and that's be Tiger, be special. When the spotlight is the hottest and when it's strictly on me, I have to do that. And he did it. Now, did he win? No. But was it a moral victory? Absolutely. Oh, yeah. Will he build on that? Yes. And I do believe we will see Tiger Woods win a major or a tournament before in the next year.
Jason, I mean, you said Brooks Koepka didn't fold, but he also wasn't playing with Tiger. How'd Gary Woodland do yesterday?
That's a good
he
point.
Was playing with him.
The heat is on when you're playing with Tiger. But Greg, he found a way to score. He didn't hit any fairways on the front nine. He shot a 32. That's what tells me this is the Tiger of old. He had a two-way miss going. You know how hard it is to play golf when you have a two-way miss? You don't know off the tee if it's going to go right, left. That is incredibly stressful. He doesn't care, because you know what? He's going to get out of trouble. He's going to find a way to make a par. Look at 18. He almost hit it out of bounds on the left. Finds a way to just rope that 9-iron around. 15-footer for birdie. Crowd goes wild. That's Tiger. He's back.
Yeah, Army golf. Left, right, left, right. I'm very familiar with it. I'm just not familiar with the par saves that he was able to pull off.
Right.
To the guy who actually won yesterday, like Shooter McGavin, I'm actually winning the tournament. Brooks Koepka, who didn't blink for a second down the stretch, even with all the Tiger roars echoing through Belle Reve. Koepka has now won two majors this year, three of the last seven. But even he didn't seem to mind. All that anyone cares about is Tiger.
Other than me, my team, everybody was rooting for Tiger. I mean, as they should. You know, he's probably he's the greatest player to ever play the game, and to have the comeback that he's having is incredible.
So I guess the question becomes, guys, is Tiger going to so overshadow even these young stars that he limits their growth? He limits the public's ability to put their arms around him. I mean, think about Brooks Koepka yesterday. He's playing a road game. Yeah, like, look, you played road games all growing up. I played road, but golfers don't. They're used to sterile environments. Nobody talks. Nobody says anything. But even Brooks Koepka is like, look, everybody's rooting against me. I just wonder if he so overshadows everybody. Eventually, Father Time will catch up to him, and we'll be left in the same or even worse spot when Tiger leaves us, in that we haven't discovered any love affair for any of these young, talented golfers.
Doug, I think we already experienced what golf is like without Tiger for the past 5 or 6 years. We know what it's like without Tiger. I think we have gotten a gift right now that Tiger is back in contention. And I think all of us know, especially everybody who is, you know, very, very into golf, we appreciate that time is coming. He's 42 years of age. We don't know how much longer that we're going to have him. So I think we've already experienced life without Tiger. But also, Brooks Koepka knows that he is making the money and the attention. The golf is getting the attention that it gets right now because of Tiger Woods. I read this on Twitter today. Brooks Koepka
won.
Well, listen to this. Jason Sobel, I'll give him credit for this. Brooks Koepka's winnings at the U.S. Open and the PGA are greater than Arnold Palmer and Gary's career winnings combined. Wow. That's because of Tiger Woods.
Okay, so the question to you, is Tiger going to limit the growth of these young players?
So I'm on the beach yesterday with friends and family, and I get some text messages start flowing in. Hey, Tiger's making a run. Jason, you got to get to a TV. So we rally the troops. I watched the back nine. I was impressed. But unlike Greg, I didn't think he was going to pull it off. And Holly, when you look at the outlook for golf, the only reason I think this isn't good is short term, it's great. We saw the ratings were up, I believe, 69%, outstanding. But how long do we keep seeing Rory and Jordan and even Brooks in Tiger's shadow and in their prime now, right, in their 20s, when they should be dominating and winning? And Tiger, as you said, won the day. I just wonder, how long do we wait for Tiger to win a major? Do we wait 5 years? Do we wait 10? When are we going to give these young guys a chance to really pop and be marketable stars that they should be?
Look, as a kid, as young kids, we've all had that moment where we played like King of the Mountain or whatever. You always wanted to be on top. There is always something to be said when you have one that is on top that everyone's chasing. It is good for athletics, it's good for sport, it is definitely, in this case, good for golf. When you look at these young golfers right now, they're having the opportunity to play with their idol. Someone who they've looked up to and they've wanted to model their games after. And to be able to say, Brooks Koepka, if I'm Brooks, I beat Tiger. We weren't head-to-head, we weren't paired, but I beat him. I didn't fold, I didn't wilt. And so that's a notch on his resume. But for me, he's great for golf. And golf is in a great position because of Tiger Woods. And having him, it's like Michael Jordan coming back to the NBA.
It didn't actually work that way in Washington with the Wizards. It actually didn't. It actually hurt because we realized he could still come back and average 20 even when he was long in the team.
And the league was hurt badly. They needed him back.
That's the parallel. The league was hurt badly when he left. And then when he came back, there was a short-term spike and then a long-term loss. But here's where I will agree with both of you and question Jason is, look at Phil Mickelson. They never paired off on a Sunday at a major, but the rise of Phil Mickelson was in the shadow and during the time of Tiger Woods. Tiger Woods, by many accounts, wasn't well-liked. I mean, it was very polarizing during his initial rise, whereas Phil Mickelson was a guy who on tour wasn't well-liked, but the American public thought he's more like me and you.
When you say well-liked, you mean media, right?
No, by Tiger? No,
yeah, I would say Tiger didn't like the media. He feuded with the media. He barely gave them access.
I don't think it was just the media. Some golf people didn't like how he cursed. Some people didn't like how he was anointed. Okay. They didn't like, you know, how they had a tiger. They called it tigerizing golf courses. Mm-hmm. People talked about the equipment. There's a lot of different things, and how he overshadowed the game of golf. This is what we do in our country. We build them up and then we tear them down.
Absolutely. Okay?
But Phil Mickelson was a guy that on tour wasn't that well liked, but suddenly became kind of America's guy. And they never had a true rivalry because they didn't play against one another. That's what golf needs. Whether it's one, two, three of these guys, these young golf guys, to go out head-to-head. It doesn't look like Ricky has it, even though he has all the swag to have it, but there's plenty of options, whether it's Spieth, whether it's Rory, whether it's Brooks Koepka, to stare him down on a Sunday at a major and take the conk from him. That's what golf needs, and then he wouldn't limit their growth.
This is what makes this different, though, and what we haven't talked about yet. This isn't just a professional comeback. This is a personal comeback on so many levels for Tiger Woods. This is personal. Think about where he's been. We talked about the DUI. He's been down. People saying he needs to retire. He's embarrassing himself. He needs to get out. He couldn't even finish 18 holes.
Did you sell your Tiger Woods stock?
I did.
You want to buy back?
I did.
I held on to mine. Did you guys see
You're
the look?
You're holding too long,
Did
Doug.
You guys look?
Too
see
long.
Hold on. Did you see the look that Brooks Koepka's girlfriend gave Tiger
yes.
Woods? Okay.
Oh, boy.
No, listen.
Oh,
In a completely platonic way, okay, I kind of think that's how all of us felt. We were all like, oh my God, he's back. This is real, it's on. Tell your friends. And the only downer is, we gotta wait like 250 days till we see him again.
I know they get the Ryder Cup. 3.5, man.
Yeah, it's gonna be awful. Welcome back, Jason McIntyre is back with me. I'm Doug Gottlieb, filling in for the boys. Let's move to college football, where the Big Ten has been rocked by another scandal, with an article dropping on Friday accusing University of Maryland football coach DJ Durkin of fostering a culture of intimidation and humiliation. The allegations come in the wake of lineman Jordan McNair's death after a team workout back in June. And Durkin has been placed on administrative leave, but his former colleague and mentor, Will Muschamp, was quick to defend the Maryland head coach.
I know DJ Durkin. He worked for me for 4 years at the University of Florida. He is an outstanding football coach, but he's also an outstanding husband and a father, and he treats people with respect. And I will use your word, alleged article. There's no credibility in anonymous sources. You know, if that former staffer had any guts, why didn't he put his name on that? I think that's gutless. I think it's a lack of journalistic integrity to print things with anonymous sources.
I'm not sure if Will Muschamp is aware, but Deep Throat was an anonymous source. Jason, look, there's a lot to dive in here. I'll give the coaching background to this. Right? The idea that you can be on a staff or, you know, be relieved of your duties from a staff and then sell out your former staff, right? That somebody who used to work at Maryland said this about Maryland, Rick Court, their strength and conditioning coach, or about DJ Durkin, which is what the article was based upon. And the idea that the whistleblower is then the bad guy, and why don't you just put your name on it? There's a guy named Abar Rouse. He was a former assistant coach at Baylor. Do you remember which Baylor scandal? It's the Baylor scandal where Patrick Dennehy was murdered by Carlos Dotson. And there was a recording of Dave Bliss, who's the head coach of Baylor, talking about putting all the blame for all the problems in the program at the feet of the then-deceased Patrick Dennehy. Right? That was recorded by Abar Rouse. He was the whistleblower. He's never worked in college athletics again. The idea that Will Muschamp thinks, hey, you put your name on it, and somehow that brings credibility to more credibility to the report than an unnamed source. Look, if the report is wrong, if the accusations are incorrect, due process will flush that out, and we can just take a breath. And I understand that he's defending a mentee and a friend, but he's not at Maryland. All he should say is, listen, the tragic death of Jordan McNair is awful, and it makes us want to double back on our efforts to make sure the student athletes are protected, right? And I know DJ Durkin. He's a friend of mine. I don't think these accusations are true because he's never acted in a way in which I felt was inappropriate during any of my time at the University of Florida with him. That's it. That's all. But instead, he doubles down and does the war on media thing, which I think makes him look very, very small.
Well, you know where he gets this from, right? Will Muschamp is a Nick Saban guy. Okay, they coached together at LSU, then with the Miami Dolphins. And what has Nick Saban done throughout his career, going after the media? Prickly, fighting, ornery. And I think, you know, he's kind of got some of that from Nick Saban. And as you said, this is a fraternity. And if you turn your back on one of your guys, maybe you're going to get left out in the cold. Maybe Muschamp is picking up for Durkin because he knows that Durkin's in trouble. We don't know the thought process when you go out there in front of the media and really go after somebody. He has no idea what happened. No clue. Like, this is really risky stuff from Muschamp, and it just feels like, I don't want to say the beginning of the end for Durkin, but it's been 3 days since this story came out, right? 3 days since nobody's defended it. Nobody's gone the opposite way, Doug, and said, hey, you know,
but
not one word out. Even with Urban Meyer at Ohio State, within a few days, we heard, hey, let's take a deep breath. Moore's going to come out, and then Urban releases his statement. I think Maryland here, I think Durkin's in some trouble.
Look, I think Durkin is in trouble as well. It should be pointed out that one of his former players, he's only been there for 2 years, yeah. One of his former players who wasn't recruited by Durkin did come out and defend him and say that's not the behavior that I experienced when I played there. But I don't even think that's the point, because I think that media members are doing what you're doing, which is we're convicting before we have all the information.
No, I'm not convicting. No,
well, I'm Jason LaCanfora on Twitter. You read Dan Wolkin's piece about how college football, listen, the reason nobody comments is because they're not allowed to comment. Okay, that's the reason that Ohio State people can't really comment, with the exception of Urban Meyer, who admitted to lying. But once you're under investigation, especially about the death of a player, you don't say anything, because anything you can could be used against you in the court of public opinion. So, look, I do think DJ Durkin's in trouble. I do think he's entitled, as all coaches are, to due process. We find out what he knew, when he knew, what did he do about it. Did he know these things were going on? Most importantly, when Jordan McNair wasn't feeling well at the end of 10-1-10s, whose care was he under? Were the coaches alerted to what was going on with his body? Why wasn't he iced down? But these are all things that come out in the investigation, and that I think that Will Muschamp is end up doing more harm than good, because in an effort to defend his friend, he goes after the media. He goes into attack mode instead of saying, hey, listen, I'm a head coach. We turn it over to the trainers. We turn it over to the strength and conditioning coach. And when a kid's not feeling well, he goes to the medical professionals. That's their job, and we trust them. And sometimes things go wrong. In this case, it went horribly wrong.
You
and
said
he creates
due process,
a distraction.
Doug. Yes. Due process is the key phrase here. And unfortunately, on social media, as we've seen, with whether it's Urban Meyer, LeSean McCoy, so many, in 2018 alone, there is no due process on social media. And once the story comes out there, it's, we got to get this guy. We got to fire him. And look, that's a major problem. I don't know how to fix that other than telling people, hey, stay off social media.
Well, look, I'm just as guilty as anyone. When the ESPN story came out about Sean Miller,
Sean Miller.
Assume Mark Schlabaugh had heard the tape. Apparently he hadn't heard the tape. we haven't heard anything about it, and we all moved to essentially convict Sean Miller. So again, this doesn't mean DJ Durkin keeps his job or should keep his job. This doesn't mean Urban Meyer keeps his job or should keep his job. But if they have an independent investigation and does a thorough investigation, we'll find out what's what. What, you know, what do they know? When do they know it? What do they do about it? And then we can get back in debate. Should he keep his job? Should he have gotten fired? And what the process should be. Welcome back, Jason McIntyre alongside. Let's move to Houston, where Carmelo Anthony will reportedly compete for a starting role with his new team, the Rockets. It became official, but he could come off the bench this season. McIntyre, are you buying Melo being okay with coming off the bench?
Well, yeah, I'm buying it because it's not happening. They give away Trevor Ariza while they lose him in free agency and his backup. He's the best small forward on the roster. They've got to start him. And by the way, he has the greatest stat right now. He's never played a game as a reserve as an NBA player. Longest streak in the league.
He should embrace being a bench player. P.J. Tucker at the four. Gordon, Paul, Harden, Clint Capella. He'll dominate bench player. To Denver, where the Broncos just busted former future franchise quarterback, that's a sentence, Paxton Lynch, all the way back to third string after he was outplayed by last year's seventh round pick, Chad Swag Kelly, in the team's preseason opener. But Lynch isn't the only pick by John Elway that hasn't worked out. Of the 48 players Elway has drafted since 2013, only 10 are currently starters in Denver, and none of them have made a Pro Bowl. So I guess the question, guys, is John Elway a bad general manager? And look, the truth is you're judged by your decisions at the quarterback position. And the first mistake he made was he goes and he drafts Brock Osweiler, who's best friends with his son. And that was a huge mistake. Okay, your best friend's my son at Arizona State, so I'm going to take him and make him my franchise quarterback. And then he doubles down by offering Brock Osweiler. Remember, people, when Brock Osweiler left and went to Houston, he left for $1 million more because he was mad because Peyton got his job back for the playoffs. But John Elway had still offered him like $15 million a year. It wasn't that he didn't like Brock. He just wasn't willing to go to war for him. Mm-hmm. Then he wanted to trade for Colin Kaepernick, but wanted to lowball Colin Kaepernick. Kaepernick's now out of the league, but because he wanted to lowball him, he went for a year with Trevor Siemian as his quarterback. And he drafted Paxton Lynch somewhere in that mix as well, who hasn't panned out. I actually think he's a pretty good general manager. I think it's really hard sometimes for superstar players to be evaluators of even their own position. Take Michael Jordan, who wasn't a good evaluator when he was in Washington, hasn't been a good evaluator in Charlotte. Doesn't take away from how good a player he is or the type of presence he has. But sometimes it's hard to get down to the nuts and bolts of what makes a great player, even at your own position.
Well, I think it took a lot of courage for him to draft somebody in the first round and sit him third on the depth chart and put mm-hmm. somebody as a later draft pick that probably wouldn't make the team at any other time. So, I mean, you got to give him credit for that. I think he has not done an outstanding job, but he hasn't done a poor job either, because he did get a Super Bowl out of the deal. He did bring in Peyton Manning. He convinced Peyton Manning to trade in his Indianapolis uniform to come to Denver and win a championship, and he did that. So how many GMs in that span of time have gotten a Super Bowl ring? So we have to give him credit, so we can't just say he's a bad GM. They didn't draft well. He only has 10 starters. Yes, no Pro Bowls, but at the end of the day, it's about winning championships. And John Elway brought another championship that he didn't play in back to Denver.
Okay, but how long can he, you know, keep saying, well, I got Peyton Manning, we won a title X amount of years ago? Like, how many more years can he do that if Case Keenum flops? Okay, he picked up Case Keenum in free agency. What if Case Keenum's terrible and Paxton Lynch, you know, is a disaster? Like, at what point do you say, man, Elway's personnel decisions, Doug, you made a great point. Like, listen, he can see the field as a quarterback. He's drafted some good defenders, okay? Quarterback has not been his spot, despite being, what, a top 10 quarterback all time? For some reason, he can't seem to identify one. It's a little mystifying.
It's really hard.
He's a little overrated.
I would say this. Look, it's really hard. And to Ty's point, okay, Bucky, you know this. It wasn't just they won a Super Bowl. When they won a Super Bowl, Peyton Manning was on his last leg. He was awful that year. They won it because of the rest of the team. All the guys that he had put in place.
Well, not all of them. I mean, you know, he inherited some of them. He was in the front office above the GM. But
look, I think his best quality is he has some lower intestinal fortitude, right? He didn't get caught up in the Tebow thing. Tebow won him a playoff game, and he was cool with bidding adieu to Tebow to get Peyton Manning in. And we brought Peyton Manning in, who didn't play for a year. He threw 50 touchdown passes.
A Hall of Famer. Come on, like Peyton Manning. Like,
yes, yes. But how many general managers will get rid of a young quarterback in his, second year in the league and get rid of him after he wins a playoff game against the Pittsburgh Steelers? Very, very few. He has some lower intestinal fortitude.
He definitely does. I think what you have to judge, I'm looking at 48 players drafted, 10 starters, no Pro Bowlers. The thing that you look at, teams are really comprised of first-round players. When I look at the starters, most of the starters are first-round players. Garrett Bowles, Bradley Roby, Bradley Chubb is going to be a starter. He missed on Paxton Lynch, and he hasn't done well evaluating the quarterback position. But it's hard. Finding a quarterback is the hardest thing to do. And when you're a star quarterback, a guy that played at a Hall of Fame level, it is hard to really look at the game the way that average guys will look at the game. And that's why some of your best coaches, some of your best general managers are guys that didn't have decorated careers because they understand all of the process, A, B, C. When you're a star player, you can skip steps sometimes. And I think for Elway, look, he acknowledged the fact that, look, I missed on Paxton Lynch, but I'm going to keep taking cuts. I give him credit for moving on from Tebow, moving on from Paxton Lynch, continue to try and find a way to get a good quarterback in. He is not afraid to be wrong.
And look, Paxton Lynch was well-regarded. There's a story out of Dallas, okay, that had the Broncos not drafted him, when instead of drafting Dak Prescott, they wanted Paxton Lynch.
There have been two people that were wrong.
And remember that even Dallas, like, Dak only happened because Tony Romo was hurt. Right? His backup was hurt too. So he got an opportunity, and he played with the best offensive line, and he had Ezekiel Elliott. That doesn't even happen. Hell, when Seattle got Russell Wilson, they actually signed Matt Flynn. Because Matt Flynn had one great game with the Green Bay Packers, and they signed him, and then they draft Russell Wilson, who everybody says, man, we were going to draft Russell Wilson. Oh, yeah? You had two chances to do so. You didn't do it. Aaron Rodgers was, remember NFL draft day? He was the last one sitting in the green room twiddling his thumbs. Yep. He was ticked. I think 23 teams had a chance. So I hear you. I understand that the numbers would stack against you, and I think Vance Joseph's in a really tough spot because they probably should have moved on from him last year, but you can't argue with the fact that they have had, up until last year, sustained success, even with those whiffs that he's had at quarterback.
I mean, I give them credit. They were a defensive team. I think we want to make Denver an offensive-led team because that's what we're used to when we talk about the Denver Broncos and the John Elway era. Mm-hmm. We want him to find a quarterback that resembles himself when he played. That's not that easy. It's probably not going to happen. They won the Super Bowl by being a defensive team, so I think we have to give him some credit because he helped put those pieces in place for them to have that great defense. So, I mean, I can't sit up here and bash him for doing a bad job.
I trust him doing the rebuild because, Bucky, you know it's coming sooner than later. This team seems like it's close to a rebuild.
They are close to a rebuild. Their defense can't continue to sustain it. They're not the same as what they were when they won the Super Bowl.
Oh, absolutely.
The amazing part is Case Keenum's their quarterback, who's the polar opposite of John Elway, right? 6 years in college, 5'11", right? No arm at all, just kind of makes plays on guts. Like, he's the opposite.
I was harsh on him, Doug. Gee.
Well, look, he's fine. He's fine. He's good enough to get to an NFC Championship game last year, but he was the lesser desirable free agent quarterback who was out there. Welcome back, Ty Law, three-time Super Bowl champ, Bucky Brooks, former player, executive in the NFL, and Jason McIntyre, IG champion, all back with me as we move to Oakland, where John Gruden's return to the Raiders is off to a bit of a rocky start. His defensive star, Khalil Mack, still holding out of training camp, and reportedly the two sides aren't any closer to a deal. And Vegas, the future home of the Raiders, is actually taking bets as to where Khalil Mack will be traded. Guys, I think that Gruden is blowing this. Now, I think he's a really good football coach. I really do. I think that sometimes we misremember how dynamic he was in Oakland and the job he did in Tampa. Granted, he was left with a very good roster and he won a Super Bowl, but with the exception of when he had quarterback injury issues, which really takes down any football team, they were at solid at worst and really a playoff team almost consistently when he was there. He wore out his welcome. He's a good football coach, but they're spending in the offseason $55 million, leaves them nothing in terms of cap room for Khalil Mack, and they took so many chances in the draft. Guys like Arden Key and Azeem Victor, those are guys that had red flags in terms of off the field. Remember, he took Maurice Hurst, the kid from Michigan, who had the heart issue. Like, you're taking all these players with red flags. You're trading a third-round pick for Martavis Bryant, who is a spectacular talent, but he's one slip up away from being out of the league for a year. So I think running fast and loose with the cap, running fast and loose with acquisitions, running fast and loose with who you're drafting, keeping Marshawn Lynch, who can be a polarizing figure in that locker room and sometimes polarizing in the negative sense, I think this thing, it doesn't, you still have Derek Carr. You feel good about that. You still have some talent at wide receiver. And if you get Khalil Mack back, who you have under club control for a couple of years, he can't go anywhere. All those things could be good, but I do feel like they've mismanaged this thing since he's gotten.
Yeah, but Doug, this is a team that has a lot of needs, okay? This is not a very good squad, and the first thing you do when you come in, you clean out the, I don't want to say trash, but you clean out the roster to suit your system, right? So that's the first step. Now, I would agree some of the draft picks were very shaky because this team, you want stable guys. He didn't exactly do that. But I think this is just year one. I think botched is very strong. I mean, we're saying that John Gruden has made total disasters everywhere. I don't think so. I mean, I think they're going to be an okay team this year, but this is a multi-year rebuild.
No, I think he's actually done a fine job. When you think about the veterans that he brought in, he has said he wanted to make sure that he had a veteran leader in each position room. He wanted those guys to come in with a chip on their shoulder, but also to play on small, modest deals. So he was able to accomplish that. When you look at the gamble that he took with Martavis Bryant, third-round pick, look, in the scouting first and second round picks, anything below that is lucky if those guys materialize. So Martavis Bryant has played at a high level when he's been right and available. They're trying to become more dynamic on offense. He's trying to piece together the defense. But this team is going to be driven by the offense. They believe they have a franchise quarterback. They have beast mode in the backfield. John Gruden is a really good coach. I was there his first season in Oakland. He is trying to bring it back to the level that he had it back then. They can be physical. They can run the ball.
But don't you think that they didn't understand the value that Khalil Mack was had, so they don't have any cash left over? The cash is a problem for the Raiders that a lot of people outside of the league don't really understand, but they don't have the cap room to fit it in.
They don't have the cap room, but they also, like, it's a spades game. Right. I got the big joke in my pocket. It doesn't matter what Khalil Mack says.
It's called a franchise tag.
So they got the franchise tag.
I thought it was the two of spades.
Oh, no, that's a big joke.
But you know what? He's doing the right thing because he's seeing all these lesser players out here getting these big contracts. And as we know, it's a very short shelf life in the NFL. You know, he sees his head coach get a $100 million deal.
Yep.
He's the face of the franchise. Even though you're an offensive guy, you want to make Carr the face of the franchise. But the reality is people know the Raiders for Khalil Mack. That's the first name that comes to mind when you think about the Raiders right now. So you don't want to have that division within the locker room. He is your best player. And regardless of how great of an offensive coach you are, and I love John Gruden. I mean, it's one of those guys, from what I hear, people love to play for him. He's a player's type of coach. Offense, you're going to win some games, but you ain't going to win that championship till you get that defense right. And how he won his Super Bowl, it was a defensive team. So it's very important for Khalil Mack to get back. John Gruden needs to make that man happy because he will not get a championship unless he has a defense.
See, now the thing is, maybe in those 10 years he was away, he looked at your old team, the New England Patriots, who don't pay anybody in the front seven. Right. And he's like, well, how good do we really need to be on defense? Maybe we can be a situational defense. You can move the ball between the 20s. We hold you to field goals. And offensively, we score enough points. It really depends on how much he believes in Derek Carr. Does he believe Derek Carr is one of those special guys? 2 years ago, people talked about Derek Carr maybe being a top five quarterback. Maybe John Gruden sees that in him, and he believes that his quarterback can elevate him to that level.
But that's where my question of keeping, you know, keeping Marshawn Lynch comes up. Plus, you know, Doug Martin, who...
You don't like beast mode?
I don't, in terms of the relationship with Derek Carr. Is it divisive in terms of the type of guy that beast mode thinks that Derek Carr is? Derek Carr is a milk and cookies in bed at 10 guy, and that's the opposite of beast mode.
Russell Wilson.
And I don't... And look, how does Russell Wilson get along with his teammates? Does that work long term? Welcome back. Jason McIntyre is back for Last Call. Let's move to the Lakers, who shifted the entire landscape of the NBA by adding LeBron James this offseason. But according to Lonzo Ball's dad, LeVar, LA is actually Lonzo's team. McIntyre, do you think it's LeBron or LeVar's team or Lonzo's team? Can they coexist?
It's LeBron's team, obviously. And yes, they can, because there's so much crazy on the roster now, Doug. Lance Stephenson, Rajon Rondo, JaVale McGee, all crazier than LeVar. I think the LeVar Ball experience is kind of over right now.
I do, too. These comments were actually made on an LA pop station on Thursday. It's Tuesday, and we got in the show, yeah. But you go back 6 months ago, yeah. It leads. Now it's like he said something that's so crazy.
The
so
boy
outlandish.
Who cried wolf, right? I mean, he said so much insane garbage that it's to the point where he can't say anything now to really ruffle feathers at all. Nobody cares.
I think there's also a fear of irrelevance here. He understands he's becoming irrelevant. He's going to say even more crazy things and become.
How come you're not wearing your Triple B shirt or sneakers today?
I didn't.
Lost in the mail. Yeah.
All right, let's move to Denver, where John Elway has faced a lot of questions about the quarterback situation lately. And he's even said he's thinking about adding a veteran to back up Case Keenum. Well, today, one reporter asked if he would consider signing one veteran in particular, Colin Kaepernick, to which Elway gave a pretty definitive response.
Well, you know what, and I said this a while ago, and, you know, Colin had his chance to be here. We offered him a contract. He didn't take it. So, you know, and as I said in my deposition, and I don't know if I'm legally able to say this, but, you know, he's had his chance to be here. He passed it.
All right, a couple things that I think got exposed today, that the deposition is the lawsuit Colin Kaepernick against the league. And I think if that's what he said under oath, there is no lawsuit, right? There just isn't. Because there wasn't some grand conspiracy to keep Colin Kaepernick out of the league if, in fact, this is true, which it's been reported as such. He was with the San Francisco 49ers. They didn't want him. He said, we'll take you. This is in 2016. If you'll take half the money, you'll take $7 million. And Colin Kaepernick passed on it. I also think, guys, it changes some of the narrative that especially social media has fallen into. I'm not going to tell you that I don't think he was at least partially backballed by his stance with the national anthem. But there's also a part of it. He was beaten out twice by Blaine Gabbert. He had issues in dealing with teammates. He had the headphones. He had not relating to teammates. And look, the job of the backup quarterback is not to be a starter, to want to be a starter. You can want to be a starter. The job of a true backup quarterback, when it's already set in place that Case Keenum, for example, is the starter, is to make that starter better. And that's not, nor has it ever been in the makeup of Colin Kaepernick. That's why when he met with Seattle going back a year ago, remember Pete Carroll came and had a press conference like, look, he still thinks he's a starter in this league. We still think, all right, that might be. So in Seattle, Russell Wilson's the starting quarterback. If you come in to meet with us about being the backup, you have to be all in on being that backup. So I think it gives us, in one short soundbite, it gives us a greater perspective on all of the different things which have kept Colin Kaepernick out of the National Football League, more so than just taking a knee when the national anthem spoke.
Agree with everything you said, Doug. That was phenomenal. I would just add this. At 30 years old, Colin Kaepernick's coming in somewhere to be a backup, if he's going to go anywhere. And you know what the role of a backup quarterback in this league is. Hold a clipboard, don't say anything, stay away from the media, and be ready if your number's called. And I just don't think Colin Kaepernick at this stage in his career is ready to do that. I think it's open and shut. That I don't think he's coming back in this league unless he's willing to be a backup, and he's made it clear he doesn't want to be one.
I think Colin Kaepernick is through in the National Football League. That's just my opinion. I don't think he'll ever play again. I also think that, you know, John Elway said it best. You know, I offered him a job. You know, he didn't want to take the job. Now, there are, say, 30 other teams out there that say, look, don't offer him a job. We're not having this. Because John Elway can't speak for every team in the National Football League. He can just speak for his team, you know, what the Denver Broncos are going to do. But do I think he'll ever play again? And being a backup, if he is a backup or a starter, I think he's a backup. He's been a lot of quarterbacks out there, don't get me wrong, starting.
But Eric, I disagree with you slightly, Jason, and I pose this to you guys. I think people get caught up in watching backup quarterbacks and they're like, well, he's better. Of course he's better than the backups. But that's not the job. That's not the job of the backup.
Right.
Okay,
right.
The backup quarterback, there's a cut that we've played with Derek Carr. And when Derek Carr was announced to be the starter ahead of Matt Schaub, Matt Schaub said, hey, man, I'm ticked. I don't think it's the right decision. But from this point forward, my job is to get you ready, right? That's the veteran guy, the Josh McCown in New York, right? Eventually, Sam Darnold's going to be the starter. And Josh McCown will do everything in his power to make sure Sam Darnold succeeds. It's not that he's not talented enough. It's that it's kind of like a backup point guard in the NBA. A backup point guard in the NBA is not the same position as a starting point guard in the NBA. Backup point guard has to press 94 feet, has to change the energy of the game, has to be able to play without the basketball some, to play with the starting point guard. It's a different role, and I think most of America sometimes gets caught up in watching backup quarterbacks and saying Colin Kaepernick at his peak, which was 5 or 6 years ago, is better than the other backups. They're right, but that's not what it takes to get that job.
Well, when we look at this, Colin Kaepernick is to blame here, as well as the NFL. He has been blackballed. There is no question about that. But we can't just put all of it on the NFL. A lot of it has to do with his style of play. Every team and every organization isn't willing to bring in a backup or a starter in that regard to make sure that they change and alter their offense around this type of player, right, when another backup has to suit his skill set. Right. That means they're going to run an offense and run a certain type of way. There's no diversity there. He's a run-first quarterback. He's not an accurate guy. So he is to blame for a lot of his opportunities being missed and passed on, and him even passing because he sees himself as something that he really is not, which is a pocket passer and what most quarterbacks in this league are sought after to do. That is not Colin Kaepernick. If he stayed in his lane and he embraces the backup role, he would have a job, I believe, and he would have had a job before this, like John Elway offered him, but he wants to be the starter, and not every offense is going to suit his liking skill set.
Yeah, I want to make sure and get to this. You said he's being blackballed. I don't think he's being blackballed. What you're describing is not being blackballed, right? Blackballed is, hey, nobody hire this dude, right? That's not what they're doing.
Well,
there's
but some of that has been, some of that has definitely taken place.
Do I think there are some owners which have gotten with other owners or to themselves are scared of the potential backlash? Yes. I talked to a general manager who said that, look, in addition to the other things, you know, small hands, doesn't change, not willing to be a backup. He's like, look, it's not if you hire him, it's what happens if you fire him. What happens if we cut him? If we cut him, are we going to be called a racist? If we cut him, is it because we're scared of political pressure? Can we cut him? Can we not? Do we lose half the locker room if we cut him? Because now other guys feel like, hey, I got to stand up for Colin. He's my teammate. I take a knee. So I do think it's some of it. But I also think there's a lot of football aspects, and I think there's a lot of pride to Colin Kaepernick, in addition to the fact that we have forgotten he lost his job in San Francisco to Blaine Gabbert twice. Okay, it did. It happened. Well before any of this took place, I think it paints a more clear picture. Is that a little bit more fair than just saying he's blackballed?
It is a little bit more fair, and I will add to this. If we take away Colin Kaepernick's face and his name, and we just insert another player, if he came with antics, off-the-field issues, regardless, or just stuff that was detracting from who we are trying to be and what we're trying to promote as an organization, teams, ownerships, and general managers and head coaches are going to steer clear of any player like that.
Right.
Not just because of the kneeling,
right,
not just because of all these things. So I do agree with that, but there has been some collaboration and heightened because of what he chose to do as far as his kneeling and his protest.
I think there's general agreement, at least for the most part here. Welcome back. Eric Dickerson, Greg Jennings, Jason McIntyre are back. Let's move to Terrell Pryor, who obviously had some fun. We had some fun with that flinch earlier this week. But Pryor seems to be taking it in stride, poking fun at himself in a tweet about the incident with the hashtag head turn, hashtag flinch and run gang, before explaining, quote, it's crucial for me to be a positive role model for the kids who came to training camp to watch us. My behavior here and during the season is bigger than proving some sort of point during joint practices. I will continue to work hard and lead by example, not making it about me and keeping it focus on the Jets. Dude, really?
Did you write that? Did you write that?
I don't play Fortnite. My son has played some, but you got to take the L dance at some point. Just take the L. Yeah, dude, I flinched. It happens. My bad. Like, let's move on. This trying to explain, it's about the kids. You know, listen, this is about the kids. But no, it's not. You had a helmet and shoulder pads on. He had none on. And DJ, like, all right, I'm a little bit, even if he would have said, hey, I'm a little bit scared of DJ Swearinger.
Here it come.
But if he would have just said, I'm a little bit scared of that dude. He's crazy. He's crazy. Look in his eyes. He's got crazy eyes. I'd be like, all right. Or he surprised me. Dude, he surprised me and I flinched. My bad. I'll get him next time.
Yeah, Doug, I got it.
But the whole idea that it's about the kids.
Come on, he's just tossing that in. Doug,
it's just about the kids.
We're bashing a guy for taking the high road, for not going after DJ Swearinger. Imagine if he had, you know, done something idiotic, like a lot of these divas do at wide receiver. We'd be bashing him. So now he puts out this nice statement that's very professional. He's a 29-year-old. Eric, stop laughing. Listen, I'm impressed. Greg, you can speak
that's
to being a diva.
That's not a diva moment if somebody flinches at you and you respond.
Well, no, I'm saying wide receivers
say
can
it with
be
your
divas.
Chest, Jason.
He
say
can't
your
win
chest.
Here, Greg. What can he do?
Take
no,
the L.
I'm with you. Thank I am you. With you, Jason. I
Is
number
it about
one.
The kids?
Number
it about
one.
The kids? I want to hear what you got.
That's PR team. Whoever is the head of PR, applause to you, because that was a perfect statement. But now this is what he has to live up to the remainder of the season. He has to be a leader in that locker room and on the field. His play has to showcase this. Like, this is why I didn't respond, because my team needs me, because I am important to what we're trying to get done as an offense. If that is the case, which what this statement is saying, basically, I need to see that. So my question now to you, Eric, what does he do?
It's enough. You can't do nothing. You got the film out there. You can't call him and say, hey, man, look.
How does he bounce back, though?
Go out and score a touchdown against DJ Swearinger when they play. That's the only thing you can do. Because, man, like you said, he got a helmet. He got shoulder pads on. He ducking like that. You can't. If let's say you do flinch. You flinch a little bit. You got to come. Hey, man. I mean, you got to be right back in his face. You can't do that. I mean, come on.
Okay, so, Eric, what's the move then? What should Terrell Pryor have done?
He should have stepped right to him.
No, we're past that. He put out this statement,
past that?
And you don't like the statement.
I don't
so should
like
he have
statement.
Let it go?
No.
Should he have apologized?
You say, you know what? I did flinch, but I did one thing. I'm not afraid of him, and I'm looking forward to seeing him again.
Or even look his.
I mean, let me put it to you like
that
this.
That is not terrible.
But let me tell you, I'm being politically correct. I can't say what I want to say, what I really want to say. You know, we really want. As a football player, you know how you really feel. I tell you what, I'm gonna get.
Yeah, but you're a Hall of Famer. You can do that. Terrell Pryor's 29. He's trying to just hang on.
If I was 29, if I was 22.
You're Eric Dickerson.
Hold on. I actually think he was on the path. I completely disagree with you on the PR team. That's where this thing got bungled. Look, go back and look at the tweet. Hashtag, you know, flinch and run gang. Like, that's funny. It's okay to make fun of yourself.
It is. I agree.
You can't do both.
Now, the whole idea that's for the kids, like, come on, stop
He's
it.
A quarterback, first thing.
He's a role model.
He's a quarterback. He's still a quarterback.
Look, things that you, when you say, I think you're lying. When you say, it ain't about the money, it's about the money. When you say, it was for the kids, like, I do like.
It ain't about the kids.
Would you think in the split second to which he thought he was getting a two-piece to when he flinched, think it was like, oh wait, I can't, the kids got to flinch.
But by adding the kids, he squashed this. There's no
story.
No, he's
not.
Hold on. What can DJ Swearinger do next? He can't say anything. He'll look like a moron. He can't come back.
He doesn't have
to.
Exactly. It's squashed by what Terrell Pryor did. It's done. We're moving on.
The second that he comes across the middle and he flinches at somebody
then
that tape is going to run.
When he scores,
yes.
Yeah.
That should be his touchdown day. Right?
Yeah.
His touchdown dance can be a flinch. Yeah. And then again, he makes fun of himself,
and
we're good.
You remember when Matt Barnes faked the ball at Kobe?
Yes.
And
yes.
Kobe just stood there?
Yes.
Like what?
Right.
That's it. Yeah. Like what?
That actually
is. Yeah. So now everybody's just stone-faced when somebody hits each other.
Come on.
Look, I'm not going to. Hold on.
Greg, what would you have done?
I honestly can say a lot of things because
you got to put yourself, yourself in this.
If I put myself in that moment after seeing that, I feel like I'm going to respond and react. I know I'm going to move out the way.
I agree with that.
But I'll probably counter with something else. So for me, it's more of he did respond. He just walked at him after him. He didn't throw a punch. If he had thrown a punch and done something.
Take your helmet off and throw it.
No. If he had thrown a punch and done something stupid and then he hurt his hand, then we're talking about the fact that he should have never responded like that. Yeah. He should have never reacted. Stop it. Yeah. Terrell Pryor, go out there tonight, make a play, walk off the field like you've been there before.
That's right.
And stick to the program.
He's a quarterback at heart.
No. Yeah. If Sean played quarterback, you would have thought maybe Terrell Pryor's left-handed and people don't even know it. All right, to Oakland, where John Gruden returns to the sideline. It's been clouded by the absence of his best defensive player, Khalil Mack, who is reportedly no closer to ending his holdout than when training camp started. Gruden claims the holdout hasn't been a distraction, but there's one guy who would like it to be, former Raider coach Jack Del Rio, who just weighed in on Twitter, writing, quote, "Gotta pay the man. Mack is the total package, great player and even better person." Guys, John Gruden can say it isn't a distraction because it's not. Remember, most of these players, most of the guys that he brought that were already there, okay, he doesn't have any sort of connection with. He's making all the calls. Those players are worried about their job. They're not worried about Khalil Mack and whether or not Khalil Mack gets paid. Khalil Mack's under contract this year, and if the Raiders want to play hardball, he's under contract next year and the year after that. And there is no negotiation. No one's sitting out an entire season. Eventually, he'll be there. It's not a distraction when you're worried about keeping your job and worried about impressing your new boss. Am I wrong here, Eric?
No, you're
right. Think it's a distraction?
No, I don't. I talked to Greg Townsend yesterday, and I asked him about Khalil Mack, and he said, "Eric, you know, one thing is that the defense wasn't good last year." You know, he said, "I talked to Gruden. The defense was we were terrible last year." He said, "And also with Khalil Mack, we weren't really no better. I think he had, by week 14, I think he got his first turnover." He said, "So what are we missing?" I mean, I disagree with that, because I think Khalil Mack is a great football player. I think he helps that football team.
Correct.
I mean, to me, the best football player in the NFL defense, Aaron Donald, should be in camp. That's a whole other subject. But I really believe they need to get something done there, because, you know, you always want your player happy. Let's just say he plays under the franchise tag this year. He's gonna come back. He's not gonna be happy next year.
This is his rookie year. It's not a franchise. Next year would be franchise tag. But like, look, guys, they don't have any money. They don't have any money.
Doug, the question was distraction.
Yes.
The only discussion right now with the Oakland Raiders is Khalil Mack. Nobody cares about these wide receivers any other positions. It's all about the one guy who reliably delivers. I know last year was a bit down for Mack, but the entire team was garbage.
Hey,
they were bad.
Hold on, their defense was bad the
year
before.
That doesn't mean Khalil Mack is bad.
I didn't say he was.
Look, and him not being there is clearly a distraction, without question. John Gruden has talked about this 5 times now.
Because he's asked about it.
Training camp has been open. Well,
because it's a distraction.
It's
a distraction. It's clearly a distraction. If I were to say, who's the best player to put on an Oakland Raiders helmet this year, who would you say? Khalil Mack.
No, absolutely not.
People would say only say Derek Carr because he's in the quarterback position.
Right, which is the most important position on the field.
No, it is.
And when
he
went down with injury 2 years ago, they were a terrible team.
Absolutely.
Khalil Mack there,
but
Khalil
when
Mack
you look
out there,
at,
they're not a bad
When you look
defense.
At what Khalil Mack brings not only to this team, but to that defensive unit, to the Oakland Raiders organization. He's been drafted there. He's done everything right. We've heard his previous coach talk about how great of a person he is. Sometimes as a player, you have to do things that you feel like you're deserving of. And holding out, although it's not the most appealing thing from a fan's perspective, they will never understand. They will never understand that.
No.
But sometimes you feel like you're being underserved when it comes to what's being put in your bank account. Regardless if it's more than what the average person makes, it's a true value.
2 years ago, they were a playoff team, and guess who was the defensive player of the year?
He was. They were one of the bottom 5 defenses in the National Football League.
He was still a standout.
Hold on. Listen, I'm not disputing how good a player he is. I would dispute the level of importance one defensive player is to the entirety. The perfect example is J.J. Watt has more sacks than anybody on earth, but it doesn't matter for Houston. It's whether or not their offense, when they have Deshaun Watson,
counter that with Von Miller in the Super Bowl, absolutely wrecking Cam Newton, winning that game for them single-handedly.
But that's not just Von Miller. Their overall defense was outstanding, much like the Rams' overall defense is outstanding. The point is, it's only a distraction because the media keeps asking about it. My feeling is, and look, you guys have been in camp. I have not been in an NFL camp. But the way I look at it, it's like when you come, when there's a change atop at your place of work, right? You can't worry about somebody else's contract, whether or not somebody else shows up at work, because all you want to do is please your new boss, because he didn't sign you. He has no ties to you. And so the question becomes, is it a distraction to the actual Raider players? Not to the press conferences, not to John Gruden, but to the actual players. And tell me if I'm wrong, but when it's somebody else's money, you don't think about it. You don't care about it. All you're concerned about is your own job and how you're viewed by your coaching staff.
Eric, I'm going to answer this really quick. Okay, because it really depends on who you are and your status on that football team. But it is a distraction to the players, because a lot of guys who think that they have an opportunity to make this team, it's really because Khalil Mack isn't there and you're getting more reps.
Right. So you're
happy. But the moment you're in the back of your mind, you know, the moment he walks into this building,
somebody's getting cut.
It's over. It's over
and
for
I'm
me.
Sure the cornerbacks are not thrilled knowing Khalil Mack ain't rushing the passer.
Yes.
You're already a bad secondary. What's going to happen without a pass rush?
Khalil Mack is the best defensive player on that football team, for sure. So when he's there, they're a average defense. Now, you're talking about a guy, I'm going to go to Aaron Donald. When he's out of that unit, that is still a good defense, but he makes it great. Khalil Mack does not make it great. Is he worth the money? Most definitely, because he's that type of player. He's a game changer. Even though it's one guy, but he's still a game changer.
Right. Now, you're making me have memories when Randy Livingston got cut in the NBA. I was in the CBA. I saw him walk into the building, and I knew time to pack my stuff. Welcome back. Jason McIntyre's back. We're joined by Fox College football reporter Bruce Feldman. Let's move to college football, shall we, where Ohio State is still investigating what Urban Meyer knew and how he responded to former assistant Zach Smith's domestic violence allegations. And the school's self-prescribed 14-day timeline for the investigation will expire this weekend. Now, several anonymous sources in college football tell the Chicago Tribune there's no way Urban Meyer loses his job over the incident. And while it appears to be trending that way, Bruce, I will say that coaches of the ilk of Urban Meyer tend to get a pass. And I think he gets a pass because of his success at Florida, because of his success at Bowling Green and at Utah and Ohio State. But even he spent 2 years in the media at ESPN. I think that helped him in terms of his relationships. And I think he was generally thought to want to get away from the mess that was SEC recruiting and the fact that he was seen as a guy that tried to save kids. I think he loses that pass. I think he loses some of the shine off of the crystal clear armor that he had worn until this point. Like, It's one thing to lie and be disingenuous to the media about an injury report. It's a completely other thing to be so steadfast and so arrogant and defiant at Big Ten Media Day when, frankly, you're in a friendly court, right? And you had time to prepare, and he was defiant, and then he comes back and says, well, you know, maybe I didn't tell the truth there, but trust me, I told the truth when I was supposed to tell the truth to my boss, Gene Smith, and threw Gene Smith completely under the bus. So, like, even if he keeps his job, I don't think it brings down this program, but some of that shine, some of that luster off the star, and I think he loses that free pass that he had probably earned in the past.
Well, I mean, keep in mind, yes, he's a highly successful coach, won national titles, two at Florida, one in Columbus, but Ohio State has fired huge, iconic coaches. They fired Woody Hayes. They fired Jim Tressel, and Jim Tressel was at the top of his game. And I would argue what Urban Meyer right now is in jeopardy for is a much more serious real world issue than what Jim Tressel got in trouble for, which was tattoos and not being honest with the NCAA and extra benefits. But it wasn't a domestic violence issue. I agree with you on the point about maybe some people had given him the benefit of the doubt. You know, back from his time at Florida where he had a lot of second and third and fourth chances to kids who got in trouble. And I think you'd look at that and go, okay, well, that was him about trying to win games and giving talented kids other opportunities if you're cynical and looking at it that way. In this case, Zach Smith was not like this, you know, world-class receivers coach.
Yeah.
I mean, this was basically him helping his mentor's grandson. And now we got to find out, like I saw it says Chicago Tribune, no, there's no way. We don't know that.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's trending, as you said, in that direction towards them finding evidence to keep him. But we don't know all the email and all the discussion that possibly could go on. I mean, as I said, this is a school that fired Jim Tressel and fired and fired Woody Hayes, whose statue is in front of the building. So let's see what the investigation finds.
You made a great point about, like, this was Urban Meyer protecting his buddies. With godson? Is that what? Okay.
Grandson.
Okay. When you look at that, and you separate it from him as a football coach, I think his legacy as a football coach is cemented, right? I mean, 3 national titles, probably already a top 10.
But you can't separate this. Well, you can't separate all that.
It's not cemented. It's not. Woody
Hayes, football.
I'll use a basketball. What is Rick Pitino's legacy?
Yes.
He won championships. He's a great coach on the court, but there's a lot of scandal around
it. And so you separate that when you look at Urban's integrity, protecting your buddy's grandson.
It's like mentor's grandson.
Still, though.
It's a domestic violence issue here, Jason. Let's look at it in this context of this. The two of the biggest issues for him in his mission statement would be honesty and zero tolerance against domestic violence issues. Both of those issues are in question right now.
And then they were at question at Florida as well. So I think definitely his legacy will take a hit as a man of integrity leading young men in college football.
And integrity is something that college coaches continually preach when they're recruiting kids. And Colin once did a segment, it was brilliant, on radio, and they went back and tracked how many college football coaches have mustaches as opposed to NFL coaches that have mustaches. Because there's this thought that sometimes people don't trust a guy with a mustache, right? That can be seen as kind of creepy. And you're like, why do they all try and be clean cut? They're not scruff and wearing hoodies on the sideline the way that Bill Belichick is. Because it's about trust, and a lot of that trust is gone. Remember, if regardless of what he knew about Aaron Hernandez, he did harbor Aaron Hernandez. Like, that was there. Forget about the Percy Harvin and some of the other nonsense that took place. Carlos Dunlap gets a sleep at the wheel DUI before the SEC
Chris
championship
Rainey's
game.
Text, the time to
right. Another domestic violence issue. I'm with you. I don't know what he knew when he knew. Or what he did about it. And I do think the 14-day timeline feels really, really sped up, although maybe we have a ton of digital evidence and they knew beforehand. But any pass that he got before and any statement before about, well, listen, this is about honesty and integrity, like, come on, dude. It really rings hollow considering what we know now was at least going on some level, regardless of how toxic that relationship was. Welcome back. Jason McIntyre is here for Last Call. Let's move to the Big 3, where league founder Ice Cube says he's still trying to get the Mamba, Kobe Bryant, to join the league, even though Kobe has repeatedly turned him down. McIntyre, should Kobe join the Big 3?
I think Kobe should instantly counter with, yeah, give me an ownership stake. Let me get a little slice of equity, and I will gladly join the Big 3. I'll show up in L.A. to the biggest crowds we've ever had. He'll go to Philly, his hometown, and turn out huge crowds. I think it would be great.
Quick hard pass. No disrespect to the Big 3. A lot of good NBA players. But his last game in a basketball uniform, a Laker uniform, 60 points, Mamba out. Okay,
You don't think he could drop 60 in the Big 3?
Derek Jeter was 5 for 5 in his last game in a Yankees uniform. He's not going to go play in some Japanese league, is he?
He might.
No,
give up the reins of the Marlins? Come on.
Gottlieb out. That's it for us. See you tomorrow.